Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Hello, so the Christmas period is over and we can all have a breather. Yes, after the onslaught of festive fixture frolics, we're in the position where we're looking forward to a weekend without fantasy football and where we're now looking forward to the second leg of the season. I'm back for the final time before March and I'm joined by the Brian Kidd and David Moyes to my so Alex in Nick and Stag. How are you both? Nick, what's going on?
I'm good, thanks, Tom. All well here. It's going to be a challenge to pod without you, of course, but we're tough lads. I think we'll be able to carry on. Just to say who we are Who Got the Assist. You can find us on Twitter at WGTA_FPL or at WGTA_Nick and Stag at FPL Stag. And make sure to find us on iTunes, SoundCloud, Spotify. So Stag, Anthony, what are we talking about on this week's pod?
So just to give everybody a rundown what we'll be covering this week. So with all these new bosses installed on the touchline at Arsenal, Everton, Watford, West Ham, and with the benefit of a little time to assess their impacts on their sides, we're going to consider the new manager bounce in FPL and specific to each of those teams. With that in mind then, with Game Week 22 on the way and Double Game Week 24 just around the corner and the chatter about it continuing to grow, especially after West Ham's stonking win over Bournemouth in Game Week 21, we're going to have to give our take on that whole debate. And we'll also have the usual features and answer some listeners' questions.
Yeah, that sounds great. So let's start with those Game Week reviews. Tom, as the guest on this pod, would you like to go first, perhaps?
Oh, this is very exciting, being a guest on my own podcast. It's excellent. And Anthony's, this entire podcast that you'll hear will be heavily edited because I'll be swearing, doing the Nick, and I'll be making lots of outlandish references to, you know, Brexit, the Tories and stuff. But in reality, I suppose I just got on with my game week. It was an interesting one. So in the extenuating circumstances, it wasn't over management, I promise. I took a minus 12 to basically set my team up for the time I'm away. The idea is that I'm going to revert to a mostly ghost management structure, which is basically that I'm probably not going to touch my team as much as I possibly can, but I'm guessing that actually means that I'll be looking at my team more than ever because I have more time on the road, more time traveling. Pope went for Fabianski, finally saw the end of Nick Pope. Aurier, the walking liability, left and TAA came in. To afford that, I had to do a couple of little moves here and there. So Grealish went out for Traore, that didn't go particularly well. And Abraham went out for Mopay. Mopay missed a big chance right at the very end to win it. And obviously, Tammy got an FPL assist. So it meant that, yeah, I on the hit itself, I lost out. I ended up 58 points. Minus 12, that got me 46 as net, which isn't too bad. The likes of Fabianski, Mane, TAA and Soyuncu, a random 8, did very well for me. And the vice-captain went to Mo Salah, who got one goal in the first 5 minutes and proceeded to do not very much else throughout the game in FPL returns terms. But there was a little dink randomly over the top where time stood still that almost went in. There was quite a few kind of decent shots, but a shot saved by Hendo. Could have been a lot more, and my hit, you know, could have really been paid if a couple of things went my way. For example, that Mopay chance I mentioned, or a couple of Adama assists were working out. So yeah, 58, not great. I only lost 100k places though, down to 569k. And my team is pretty well set basically for the next 3 or 4 weeks, all the way up to double game week effectively. So yeah, win some, you lose some. I think the minus 12 was good, basically, because I haven't used my wild card. My team is looking pretty nice. What about you guys?
Yep. So for me, I got 56 points, which is pretty much a grey arrow. I think I ended up just going up 2K places in total. It started off pretty well for me this game week. And with the aforementioned Jack Grealish getting those 13 points, did really well. Looked, you know, had a really good game. Could have even got more if that other goal hadn't been disallowed. And Maddison getting me an 11 pointer as well. Those were the two key guys for me in this particular game week. Soyuncu as well, picking up a clean sheet for 8 points and Mane getting 8 points. But yeah, with Vardy not playing, Rashford was my vice captain, unfortunately, which meant he only got 2 points times two, 4 points. And not having Mo Salah made that Liverpool game and the early goal particularly scary, because I could see myself losing that green arrow pretty rapidly if he got a massive haul. Turned out okay-ish, I guess, right on the average for the top 10K, that 56-pointer. So yeah, still around sort of the 185K mark, a little bit of a red arrow from Christmas, but not too bad.
Yeah, unfortunately, it was another case of disappointment for me. I had a 48 points and a game week rank of 3.7 million. So there was definitely contrasting fortunes between the real life David Moyes and maybe the who got the assist David Moyes, unfortunately. I burnt two of my free transfers to change Digne to Trent Alexander-Arnold to rectify that massive mistake. And then I also jumped on the form of Traore in favour of Pulisic. I guess Trent did pay off to some extent, whereas Traore didn't. I had no Vardy, unfortunately. So like Nick, my vice-captain was Marcus Rashford. However, it was intentionally so, but it was still the same result, disappointment. So Todd Cantwell, who had 10 points, who I did actually start, thankfully, and Mane's 8 points and Soyuncu's 8 points, as well as Trent Alexander's clean sheet, was pretty much all I had this week. So really, the big difference for me is that I just haven't got enough Liverpool cover. I need a third Liverpool player, be that a defender or be that an attacker. And so with just one free transfer in the can going forward, I'm looking at a full reconstruction project, massive hits, maybe like Tom did, or perhaps even wildcarding early. And then just really getting into FPL manager mode to manage the double game weeks and blanks as they come later in the season. We shall see.
Yeah, certainly. I think definitely merits to that wildcard idea. We'll talk about that in the questions and talk about Liverpool kind of conundrum as well later on. But for now, I think we're going to look at the main kind of topic of this week, which is the new manager bounces. And I think that's a nice way, a nice lens through which to look at the last few weeks and focus in on a few areas where there could be some opportunities for managers, just because some teams who have been completely written off, the likes of Arsenal, Everton, Watford and West Ham, that under the new bosses could well now be on the radar, especially with a double game with West Ham too. I'll do this by kind of talking a little bit about the team improvements, you know, their key assets and the fixtures as well, just to assess, well, is it worth jumping on these guys? I guess to start off, historically, there are quite a few kind of examples, both in recent history and in further back, I suppose. You know, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer last year when he came in, obviously reinvigorated the Man United assets. Suddenly, Rashford and Pogba were the go-to men. And I also remember in the past, the likes of Chelsea, when they had their new manager every single season at the beginning of the season, they always won 5 or 6-0 on day one, didn't they? I remember Scolari, I think, beat Sunderland and Southampton 5 or 6-0 on the first day. But last year, Rodgers is another great example of this as well. Jamie Vardy, a player who was reinvigorated and brought back from the brink of obsolescence through Rodgers coming in. On our Talisman Theory, for example, we reported that he scored a 48% increase in his non-appearance points between March and the end of the season as Rodgers' new approach, i.e. just poach Jamie, came into play. What do you guys reckon? What do you guys remember from historic new manager bounces and how they've impacted your FPL?
So I guess, Tom, what I've done is I've actually looked back at new manager bounces from an FPL point of view. And in doing so, I've basically looked at a 2018 article by Peter Blake, who is an active member of the FPL community. You'll find him at MathSafeFPL. That's with one S in there. And what Peter did in his study was that he found that the new manager bounce does indeed affect FPL. In a study that focused on the averaged FPL points per player, and he did indeed focus specifically on where there was mid-season managerial changes too, which is directly relevant to all of the cases that we're studying here. What Peter found was that it was defenders that profited the most from the managerial change and the new manager bounce. I guess it's obviously a lot of these teams were struggling. Different managers have come in, think Big Sam type thing, who have shored up defenses, and sure enough, clean sheets have started to come faster than they had been previously. Goalkeepers and forwards as results fluctuated wildly, but there was a general trend, positive direction for both of them as well. I guess goalkeepers benefiting from the clean sheets, whilst forwards, you know, getting on the goals as form turned for the most part. Midfielders were affected less by the bounce. And I think that makes sense because this is being taken in a general sense across the board. Only one player or two players, given there's an assist to, can be credited for an attacking score. So in general, the average for 4 or 5 midfielders in a given game week won't be affected too much, and they get little from clean sheets as well. So it isn't too surprising that midfielders, in a general sense, gain very little from the new manager bounce, but maybe specific assets still are affected no more than a forward would be. So there is definitely a lot to consider when it comes to the new manager bounce and FPL.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's some really interesting analysis there from Peter in that particular article. I think, yeah, obviously some really good cases raised there by Tom as well, the likes of Brendan Rodgers, who arguably still experiencing that new manager bounce. Those Leicester players have been absolutely brilliant since he's come to the helm. And Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, who had a slightly differing experience. If we move on perhaps to talk about the teams and their new managers that have come in, I think we're going to start off with Arsenal, aren't we? And obviously Mikel Arteta. It's not necessarily been a fantastic beginning for him as the new Arsenal manager. But after that Manchester United game, it certainly looked very positive for Arsenal in terms of that performance, where they just absolutely, I think it's probably their best performance of the season. We saw a few players like some Nicolas Pepe, for instance, look absolutely fantastic, putting in his best performance. So I think it's, we're starting to look at these Arsenal players. I think actually, can we consider them for our FPL teams, especially considering looking at Arsenal's next five? It's pretty damn reasonable. They've got Crystal Palace, Sheffield United, Chelsea, Burnley and Newcastle up next. So Tom, as our resident Arsenal fan, I know you're a big fan of Arteta and you're quietly confident, perhaps, that things might change around at Arsenal, who've been pretty diabolical for the last year and a half.
Yeah. So, I mean, Emery was sacked on the 29th of November. We had a little while with the Ljungberg supply teacher, but I think we kind of then moved to the world-class setting and got Arteta in, basically. I took his first game on Boxing Day. First two games under Arteta, seen us set up in a 4-4-2 defensively, but a City-esque 2-3-5 going forward. Michael Cox also pointed this out in an article in The Athletic. Also, on that Pep point, I noticed this weekend that David Luiz and even Socrates were charged with bringing the ball out to open up passing avenues from the back, which is obviously another Pepism. But to have a look at how much there's been a bounce, obviously it's a very small sample size. I compared Arteta's previous two games versus the sample of Emery's final game, so that's 10 to 13 this season, on an average game basis. And I found the following. So under Arteta, we took more shots in the box and we've had more frequent big chances. But in line with what Anthony was saying earlier in terms of Peter's article, defensively there's been a huge improvement so far. We formerly had a goal attempt conceded every 18.5 minutes. It's 11.5 under Arteta. We've almost halved the time of big chances conceded. It used to be once every 38.5 minutes and it's now 64.3. There's two big factors here. One is Torreira. Unsurprisingly, if you play a defensive midfielder in the defensive midfield position, you have someone finally who breaks up attacks. For some reason, Emery wants him to be a box-to-box playmaker. Very bizarre. But the second one's a bit more surprising. In the last game, Mesut Ozil got 10 ball recoveries. Not really sure what's going on there. But that has led to a few kind of pieces of interest in the Arsenal defence. Leno, obviously, got a double-digit return, I think, this weekend. Got a two bonus. Nick smirking because, obviously, there can be no interest in Leno whatsoever. The man who made the most errors leading to goal last season with six. The year before, the man leading the errors to goal tally was the Arsenal goalkeeper, Peter Cech. So, not buying it. Kolasinac in defence, very advanced. Bellerin. But Aubameyang, Laka and Pepe, as Nick just mentioned, Pepe looks like one to watch. Last season, he had an open play XGI of 23.9 for Lille. Not suggesting he's going to get that, but if he did get that, that would put him in the top five for XGI last season amongst mids. And Aubameyang's also staying. So it could be, I'm not sure that I'd ever want to back Arsenal at the moment, but it could be that, as Nick said, when those fixtures do clear up, because, I mean, from 22 all the way until, well, all the way until the end of the season, it's just Chelsea in 24, Man City in 28, and then 35 and 36, which are difficult games. The rest are eminently winnable, and you'd be expecting Arteta, I guess, to kick off his career with a decent run of results now that he's got the initial kind of loss out of the way. What do you guys think to the FPL relevance of that?
I think you've made some really good points there, Tom. I think, obviously, from an Arsenal perspective in FPL, we've not really owned them all season. And it's not just because of their performances, but it's also price that's quite a significant factor in terms of looking at the Arsenal players. Obviously, the defence, they've barely kept any clean sheets all season. But Kolasinac was one that I did notice in that Manchester United game, looking very attacking, getting lots of opportunities. And he nearly picked up an assist for that Pepe goal, didn't he? So I think he's certainly one to watch. He started his first game. He didn't play the other two games. But in the 68-minute cameo performance, I think he's certainly one that we do need to sort of keep our eye on, perhaps not looking at him at the moment because it's sort of 5.2 million and he's more expensive than the likes of Soyuncu and some of these other defenders that have been performing a lot better than than himself. But up front, Aubameyang certainly needs to be talked about. He's actually snuck into the market forces this game week. And it's because he's actually now the fourth highest scorer in FPL. He's really sort of floated under the radar a little bit with only an 18.8% ownership at this particular moment in time. But a few managers looking at him now, with the likes of Kane being injured, with Vardy also having a yellow flag, has meant that some of the managers have started to think, actually, Aubameyang, you know, he looks like a pretty decent player. And obviously, he's got 13 goals. He shared the golden boot last season as well with Mane and Salah. And I think he's certainly one that needs to be on our radar. But like I said, the price is slightly off-putting when it comes to the Arsenal assets. At 10.8 million for Aubameyang, he's another very expensive forward. You know, he's more expensive than the likes of Vardy, the likes of Rashford, Abraham and Jimenez, who have been in our front lines over the course of the season.
What I found interesting about watching that Arsenal team versus Manchester United was the structure and energy that they brought into their play. They were playing in this 4-2-3-1, but they had so much speed and conviction behind their passes and how they played. None more so by Nicola Pepe, who is priced at 9.1 million, but who did absolutely brilliantly. He only scored one goal, but he could so easily have created a goal. He could quite easily have scored another as well, most memorably after David De Gea's poor clearance left him with this beautifully executed curler, which ended up hitting the post. He's definitely right on my radar, as is Mesut Ozil. You noted his recoveries. He also covered more distance than any other Arsenal player at the weekend, which is just interesting when you talk about energy being brought into Arsenal's play. If you can see energy being brought into someone like Mesut Ozil's play, it's quite interesting to ponder what could come from him as time goes on. His defense-splitting passes have always been there, even when he's been out of form. So it'll be quite interesting to see how he could develop over the next few weeks as well. You guys are even saying that looking at the fixtures, you're kind of almost postponing the idea of bringing in an Arsenal player until maybe post-game week 24, let's say. I don't think there's anything to fear with bringing them in right now. Like, maybe one. It's a great place to punt. And for someone like me who's maybe considering a wild card as it stands right now, someone like Nicola Pepe or Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, as you note as well, who has low ownership, could be particularly brilliant assets to have on your side as they seem to be turning that ship around. There's also a huge similarity to their play to maybe how Manchester City played. You could see they were trying to get to the byline to cut back every so often. That was definitely a factor of their play that you didn't see so much under Emery, that seemed to be showing under Arteta already. And I'd be wondering where that can go with the weeks as they pass.
The issue is the price, as Nick was mentioning. So a lot of the time, you know, 10.8 million for Aubameyang versus 9 for Rashford, 6.7 for this season's hero, Danny Ings, none of us own. In defence, David Luiz, I mean, you can be really pressing confirm on David Luiz. I may be made to beat those words. Actually, I won't, so I won't be here. But 5.7 million, David Luiz, are you going to really be paying that when you can pay, I don't know, 5 million for the likes of George Baldock? I don't know. It's a bit of a strange situation when we're saying that Sheffield United assets and Southampton assets are more preferable to Arsenal assets. And I think there's definitely, as you say, an opportunity to lean into that. The man who knows when to press triangle to do the through ball, Mesut Ozil as well, is the guy who could be of great interest to many people. Obviously completely shunned by the majority of the community, but just 7.2 there of real interest. Yeah, there's obviously opportunity in the fact that they've been priced a little bit higher than we want them to be. They're a bit more awkward to get in, which could mean that if you are wildcarding or you are doing some surgery, you could definitely get some sort of return there.
Yeah, like the ultimate players to bring in if you're doing that surgery, really, I think, are Nicola Pepe and Mesut Ozil. They don't interrupt your forward budget, let's say, where it's pretty obvious where you're going to fill at least two of those slots, based on form anyway, with the likes of Ings and Jamie Vardy. Whereas at midfield, I think there's an awful lot of people who've had that space for, say, one of the Spurs midfielders. It was Son, it probably became Ali, and now it's probably going to become somebody else. And so even for people who aren't going on wildcard, Pepe or even Ozil are accessible.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's obviously a lot of interest here in some of these Arsenal players. I think personally from my own FPL team, I'm probably too risk averse to take a gamble on one of them at this particular moment in time. But I think we definitely need to keep our eye on them. And if they can continue this new vein of form after that United game, then they will start to appear more heavily on our radar. But shall we move on now to Everton, another team that done pretty well since their new manager has come in, Carlo Ancelotti. Obviously, they lost against Manchester City, which was always going to be a tough game. But previous to that, they had decent victories against the likes of Newcastle and Burnley. And I think having someone like Ancelotti in, a sort of three times Champions League winner as a manager, is always going to bring on an aura of positivity around the camp. Looking at sort of the last few game weeks of Marco Silva reign, was was sorely lacking. And, you know, you can see it in some of the output. I know, Tom, you've got a lot to say about Everton, so would you like to begin?
Yeah, so, I mean, as you mentioned, there's definitely been a galvanising effect. I think that's probably true of Arteta at Arsenal as well. As Stag said, to the eye, you can see there's a bit of a difference, or zip, a bit more pizzazz about the players. But Marco Silva's sacking, Duncan Ferguson's caretaker role, and Ancelotti being in charge of Boxing Day. A bit of an odd appointment, that, actually, just as a side note. It's a bit of a kind of Bielsa-esque, I'm doing whatever the hell I want at my football manager save. I always saw Ancelotti as being more of a keep the good times rolling sort of guy rather than a scrapper, but he's doing all right. I mean, I looked at the same comparison as I did for Arsenal, compared kind of 10 to 13 for Marco Silva and the last couple for Ancelotti. And what's really clear is that the minutes per XG have really increased a lot. It was 1 XG per 81 minutes under Marco Silva, 1 XG just 45 minutes under Ancelotti. So the chance creation is going upwards. But we've long said that Everton actually had quite a tight defence. They were long top the charts for the lowest big chance created, for example. But I think the big FPL impact that we've seen is that a combination of Ancelotti and Ferguson has lit DCL, that Dominic Calvert-Lewin, who's now in the conversation at 5.8 million. Over the last six, his data was absolutely ridiculous. Second for goal attempts, second for shots in the box, and second for shots on target too with 10, just one less than Jesus and Rashford. He's also converting a lot though, 28.6% conversion rate at the moment. But at 5.8 million, I regret buying Mopay looking at those numbers. So I guess, yeah, but you know, you've got like Richarlison, you've got Sidibe, who I think was on, or I don't know whether he got it, but I think he was on two bonus at one point despite losing 2-1 away, which is pretty damn good, isn't it, really? So guys, Everton then, they've got a decent run coming up, and I think that they could definitely be the sort of team that would be better priced, I suppose, to be buying in, even if you aren't, you don't need to do surgery to buy the sort of the toffees in, do you?
Yeah, I mean, Dominic Calvert-Lewin is actually a player that I'm actually probably going to be bringing in either this game week or the following game week. 5.8 million, he acts as a really good enabler in that front line, and it gives me extra money to afford sort of like a Liverpool double up potentially in midfield of Salah and Mane. So he is a player that is heavily on my radar. And like you said, yeah, his underlying stats are fantastic in the last few game weeks. He's now got 8 goals for the season. That's his best ever in the Premier League, and certainly looks like a man that is invigorated under the new manager, who's definitely showing some very prolific output. I think Sidibe's and the other one that you mentioned there, I think he's another player that looks pretty good. I think since Ancelotti's taken over, he's played a few different formations. It's still up in the air in terms of what is his best formation, or what is the plan is there. I think I mentioned on the last pod that I was worried about rotation risk there with Coleman. But in the last game, he played another formation, and he had Sidibe as a wing back and Coleman as part of a back three, which was quite interesting to see. So it'll be interesting to see if he settles on that formation, or if you continue to see a little bit of rotation there. So there's obviously a bit of a threat there. But I think in terms of the defenders, he looks like the one with the most attacking out threat. I think he also played out of position as an attacking right winger as well in one of the games. So I think it was the game against Burnley where he picked up that assist. So definitely one to watch there. The other one I think I mentioned in the last pod as well was Mason Holgate. I think just in terms of his price, 4.4 million. I think he slots in quite nicely as a sort of fourth or fifth defender. I think he's better value for your teams compared to, you know, the likes of Martin Kelly and, dare I mention, Diego Rico as well, around that same price now. So Holgate, he's played every game since game week 10. So he looks like he's nailed on in that Everton team now, and another young player that possibly will thrive under the new manager. Stag, what do you think about the Everton assets? I haven't mentioned Richarlison as well, as another one perhaps worth considering.
Yeah, so going from back to front, I think the back three with Sidibe playing as a right wing back is probably what you're going to see going forward. I think what Ancelotti is trying to do is he's actually trying to find a way to accommodate, I guess, his best defenders whilst also trying to link up that attack. And that's why he's found a way to get Seamus Coleman into the team whilst also getting Sidibe on the team. And from a Republic of Ireland point of view, it's brilliant to find a way that we'll be able to get Matt Doherty and Seamus Coleman on the pitch at the same time. He's showing the way to our manager, Mick McCarthy, for the future. But then looking forward in that team, Richarlison is one player who I think I would term a trap. in this side. You know, even in the last five game weeks, he only had 9 shots. 5 of those have come in the box. He hasn't really been all that central to anything that that side have been doing. He's had less XG than Connor Wickham, for example, who's played 45 minutes in that time. He's had 1.15, by the way. So it's, he's not particularly well suited to it. Up front, though, it is DCL who, as you've outlined, is really hitting the high numbers in terms of stats. He's right up there in the top 10 in terms of the likes of shots in the box, XG, etc., over the last 4 or 5 game weeks. And that's very promising, especially given his price point.
Yeah, and I guess what's really good as well about them is that they've got kind-looking next 5, Brighton, West Ham, Newcastle, Watford and Crystal Palace, before they run into another 4-way of very, very poor fixtures, Arsenal, Man United, Chelsea and Liverpool. But over those next 5, there can definitely be some profit, especially for DCL. I think DCL is a very nice sort of way for people to pivot towards the double Liverpool midfield, for example. You know, replacing a Rashford with Dominic Calvert-Lewin, suddenly you've got all that money to turn your Ali or turn your... into a Salah.
Exactly, I think he could definitely
Exactly. So I think he could definitely get onto the radar, couldn't he? We've sold FBL here, haven't we?
Yeah, it seems like we've sourced out the ultimate team for everyone.
Yeah, basically by Calvert-Lewin. But yeah, it's very interesting to see that he's become a player who has discovered that sort of instinct, that knack for scoring goals. Before, I think we were looking at him and thinking he was, there are shades of a Dom Solanke about him and that he was an assister rather than a goal scorer, a Giroud, a non-goal scoring forward. Whereas now it looks like he's right at the sharp end. And when Ancelotti's a pragmatist, doesn't really have a favoured formation, so to speak. He just does whatever he's told, effectively. On Richarlison, 8.0, I can see why, again, he would be on the same sort of level as Pepe for me, but like I'm not sure he's quite a trap, Anthony. I think he's still a player who has a proven pedigree of doing stuff. Maybe not so much in the second half of the season, granted. But under Ancelotti, I think he has looked pretty promising. I think he's 4 fresh giant midfielders over the last 2. Obviously, it's a very small sample size, but it's like he's still doing stuff. It's just whether it's the case of whether you want to part with your 8 million on that. But the next 5 fixes are good enough to maybe have a look at them. The one I'm really interested in is Sidibe and Holgate. 4.4 for Holgate, I think, is looking a really, really good value. And I think it'd be a really, really good replacement for young Martin Kelly, whose time is becoming increasingly nigh.
What I would say about Richarlison is that his XGI is being completely skewed by, I guess, the goal that he scored at the weekend.
Yeah, it was a Danny Ings goal, wasn't it?
Exactly, and I think that that's definitely skewing his numbers, especially when you consider that it's such a small sample size. If he was a 6 million rated midfielder or a 5 million rated midfielder, then we wouldn't be interested in him. The fact of the matter is that I'm sure Mark Noble probably has a higher XGI than him over the last 2 game weeks, and he only played one of them. And I don't think we'd be all that interested in him at all. So I think I'll stick with, there is definitely an element of a trap to Richarlison. And it is definitely reputation that's carrying him through. He's not central to that team at all in terms of how it's attacking. They're often playing with 2 attackers and having DCL and Mazaken up front there. Just not interested at all.
No, it certainly makes sense. I like how you say element of a trap rather than calling him a trap outright. That's very, very good. You're learning from me. Plausible deniability. If someone says, you said it was a trap, you can just be like, no, I said it's an element of a trap. So I left the door open. That's what we need to do within this particular area. Speaking of traps, Watford. Paul Pryor asked, can we expect Watford's bounce to continue? I think it was Kike Sanchez Flores. He was sacked on the 1st of December again. And Nigel Pearson, a British manager, a proper British manager, British jobs for British managers, came in on the 6th of December. So I compared the last 4 again to my favourite 10 to 13 and noticed a couple of key things again. One, they doubled the rate of big chances created. Doucouré in the number 10 slot appears to have had a bit of an impact there. They've gone from 0.5 big chances created per match to 1.2 under Pearson. The minutes per big chance created, therefore, has had a big increase. Under QSF, they created 1 every 76 minutes. Under Pearson, it's 1 every 43. One guy I think who I'm particularly interested in is Mela Sarr, 6.2. He's 5th for XG amongst midfielders over the last 6 games. He's very, very low owned for one of those players who could really, if he does get, you know, an 8 or a 10, really be one of those players who could push you up the table, help you climb, especially because he's relatively inexpensive. In defence as well, there's lots of cheap options, lots of Cathcart, Femenia, 4.2, although he was injured in the last game. And up top, you've got the Deulofeu, who's now being played as a forward once more. So yeah, a few options here too. Nick, what do you reckon to Watford? Are you looking to get any Hornets in your team? Are you worried about being stung?
When Nigel Pearson took over the helm, I wasn't kind of like overly enthusiastic about the appointment. I thought it was going to be another, you know, season of struggle for Watford all into the end of proper relegation dogfight. And it might still be a relegation dogfight for them, but they've certainly improved their performances under them. And, you know, those gutsy performances against the likes of Aston Villa and Wolves has made me to actually think, could I consider Watford playing my team? And, you know, sort of some of the feedback from some of the players has been very positive since Nigel Pearson has come to the helm. For instance, Ben Foster basically said, we just needed someone to stick a rocket up us, and that's all it is, simple as that. And Ducouré has also said that just establishing the basics has helped him and others rediscover their talents. So, it seems like Nigel Pearson's back-to-basics philosophy has improved things a little bit at Watford. I mean, in terms of the assets, realistically, I think you mentioned Cathcart perhaps as an example of a cheaper defender that's available. I think if you're looking at goalkeepers, perhaps you should look at Ben Foster as well, maybe. I know we've all sort of been sold Fabianski wagon, particularly because of the double game week. But Foster needs to be considered. At the beginning of the season, he was 5 million and Watford would die, so no one was actually considering him at all. But in terms of sort of goalkeeper returns, and I know we don't tend to overanalyze the goalkeepers, but he's actually matching Henderson and Ryan now as joint second for points for all goalkeepers with 81. And he's even cheaper than Henderson now, having Henderson started at 4.5 million. So he's one that I'm considering perhaps, especially if Fabianski's injured. So I'm looking at him perhaps as a Gazzaniga replacement. But Ducouré in the midfield's the other one. I think you mentioned Tom playing in that number 10 slot, goal and assist in the last couple of games. Perhaps we need to consider him. So Anthony, what do you have on Watford?
There has been a particularly pronounced new manager bounce with Watford. Maybe that's especially so considering how poor Watford were under both of their two managers that they've had so far this season. So in the five games that Pearson's had, it's been three wins, all of which came at home, which may prove an interesting detail as time passes. Then there was a loss to Liverpool, and then there was a 1-1 draw away to Sheffield United. So as the articles start to roll in heavily praising Pearson and what he's done, we need to start to kind of look at that team in proper detail. And I've focused on that attacking trident that they have of Troy Deeney, Gerard Deulofeu, whose name is always misspelled, and Ismail Assar, who have played all of the three games together. Now, Deeney is the one who has, I guess, on paper done the best. He's got three goals, but if you really dig into those details, you'll find that he's extremely reliant on penalties. He has a non-penalty XG of 1.17. over the course of those five games, which is less than the likes of Shane Long, who played 200 minutes, or Conor Wickham, who's played 45, as we mentioned earlier in this pod. And then Gerard Deulofeu, who is 1 million less than Sarr, but his class is a forward. He's had two goals so far in the period, and that included a well-taken finesse shot on New Year's Day. But he's not actually overly convincing when you look at his underlying attacking statistics. He is still the creator in chief in gross terms for that team, but he hasn't actually created any big chances. It's actually Troy Deeney again who leads in this department with three big chances created. However, that said, if you watch any Watford game, it is Gerard Deulofeu who passes the eye test. He does go past players, and he is the one that continues to show up on match of the day. So worth being careful of him, but maybe actually considering ahead of him, Ismail Assar, who is the one who's getting the chances. He's had 11 shots in the box, which is just a little less than the likes of Danny Ings, DCL, and Raul Jimenez over the last five game weeks. And he's also had a decent XG in that period with 1.88. But the real benefit for Sarr ahead of, let's say, Deeney and Deulofeu is the fact that he's, of course, classed as a midfielder. So you're able to get more bang for your buck when he actually finds the net compared to the likes of Gerry D or Troy. So that's particularly interesting. So it's Sarr that's reached the fore for me. The defensive story as an overall thing is not that great. It's quite actually similar to Kike Sanchez-Flores' record, where Watford's defence isn't quite relegation form bad, but it's certainly bottom half bad. But what I did was I filtered out the Liverpool and Man United games from their fixtures, i.e. just take the last three games, where they conceded just two goals and they got a clean sheet as well. And what you find then is that they're decidedly mid-table for all of the important stats, which is pretty promising. So in terms of shots in the box conceded, XG conceded, etc., they were very, very mid-table. And so with that in mind, I think Ben Foster is the one to pick up. There are budget defensive options, but it's Foster who's going to be getting the save points. He got save points in two of the last three games, and he also got a clean sheet as well. That clean sheet was eminently possible given the underlying stats. It wasn't a complete abnormality. So Foster for me going forward, with Bournemouth away, Spurs at home, Villa, Everton and Brighton to come.
Weren't you stuck with him last season for a very, very long stretch of time? I vaguely remember you posted that gif of that of the motorcycle going off without a driver and just being like, Ben Foster owners feel like this.
Yeah, yeah, it was life as a Ben Foster owner. That was a ridiculously well-liked tweet from what it was. I was stuck with him. It's a bit like with Pope this year.
Yeah, just get him out. Just take him on his 12 and get rid of him. Yeah. But no, I wouldn't advise that for anyone writes in. But the reality of Watford that I find particularly enthralling is that they are the epitome of that sort of team that's been completely forgotten. Can either of you tell me who the highest selected player is from Watford and make a guess at the percentage as well?
I'd probably say it was Deo Lefeo because I remember him being a popular pick before at the beginning of the season just because of he got a couple of hat-tricks last season against the likes of Cardiff and Huddersfield. But I'd probably say it might only be, I'd hazard a guess, about 7%.
Okay. Stag, what do you reckon?
I'm just trying to think, did they have some 4.0 rated defender that was like, you know, the sort of player that people just threw their money into whose price would never change that got popular? But I don't think there was. It was Mariappa a few seasons ago.
Yeah, Maps. No, it's Ben Foster, and he's 3% owned. He's the highest owned Watford player, 3%. Delafay, you mentioned, 2.4%. Dini, 1%, and Saar, 0.8% owned, Ismaila Saar. So they really represent a good example of a team that if you invest in them and you get it right, they could really fire you up those rankings. A bit of a downside, perhaps, is their fixtures. So they've got Bournemouth, Tottenham, Villa, Everton and Brighton. Actually, there's not too much of a downside, is it? And those fixtures are okay. So, I mean, I'm kicking myself a little bit because obviously I sold Grealish and I had to get Adama in. But if I'd have gone another way, I maybe would have got Saar in. He got an assist, obviously, this week. But I really like what you said about him being out of position, being kind of a proxy Sadio Mane of that team at the moment.
Who got the assist?
And we're back. So following on from our talking about new manager bounces, where better to go than to West Ham, where David Moyes has really kicked into gear with a big 4-0 win over Bournemouth at the weekend that definitely merits an FPL conversation. What are your thoughts on it, Tom?
Yeah, so I mean, Pellegrini sacked on the 28th and Moyes installed by the Porn Barons, Golden Sullivan on the 29th to a collective mare. Surge on Planet FPL said the 18-month contract was like saying, we trust you enough to finish the season, but not really enough to give you a longer deal. So it's kind of hedging all round, isn't it? It's 18 months, it really is 6 months. We'll see how you do. And then by the way through next year, I'm sure we'll get rid of you like a soggy chip. But what will Moyes bring? He's going to bring crosses and lots of them, as United fans will know. He even said, and I laughed at this, but I'm guessing no one else will because it was incredibly geeky, to The Athletic that he was glad to find one of the big men getting the end of one of the crosses as Allaire got the end of one this weekend. So just one match, there's no, we can't really, obviously it was tenuous to do two as well, but I tried to have a look at how David Moyes did over the last tenure compared to Pellegrini, but really I think things have changed so much since Moyes was there. He's now got an embarrassment of attacking riches, obviously not doing very much, but he does have that kind of level of player there nowadays. So I didn't really do that comparison. Instead, we should probably look at the players. I think the one man is the man who's been referenced by many in Fabianski. As I said in pre-season, he is an eponymously fab goalkeeper. Last season, he prevented a De Gea-esque 10-plus goals compared to the amount of goals he should have conceded, as well as getting the most saves to boot. I mean, the fixtures aren't particularly good, and I guess many have looked at West Ham's fixtures and thought, nah, you're just getting carried away by a double game week. But, I mean, this year, clean sheets are so unpredictable that 4.9 is a 0.4 premium, yeah. But with the history of saves and points per game of 3.5 plus a double game week, maybe is actually a decent bargain. I don't really mind that. Plus, if he does get a cleanie with all those saves, he may well get a double-digit return. So he was one of the guys who came in for me on my wild card, and I got a six-pointer straight away. I now see that he may be injured for the FA Cup this weekend. It's the FA Cup, and no one cares. Right, Fabianski, should we start there before maybe looking at cheekier picks like Antonio and Allaire? Nick, you're looking at Fabianski for Gazzaniga, aren't you?
Yeah, I am considering him. I think, yeah, we talk about new manager bounces, but it's almost like a new goalkeeper bounce for West Ham as well. And just having a goalkeeper at the back of the team will provide the rest of the team with confidence, because obviously they need to trust their goalkeeper. And I think, the 4-0 demolition of Bournemouth was really impressive. Fantastic start for Moyes's tenure. But, Bournemouth look absolutely terrible right now. They only managed to create 3 chances in that game. And they've obviously got a few injuries as well. I think Moyes won't find too many easier games than that. Just talking about Moyes, I found it entertaining that he said, I win, it's what I do, as part of all when he was hired, which is a bit of a funny thing to say, considering
33% win rate or something like that.
Yeah, and his Sunderland win percentage, he only won 8 games there and had a win percentage of 18.6%. So it remains to be seen if he's going to get the old gang back together and sign Oviedo and Paddy McNair and crew. But all jokes aside, it was a really good start for West Ham and perhaps a sign of change at the club there. And yeah, as you said, the fixtures aren't particularly great. Sheffield United away. I mean, it's a middling game considering Sheffield United's form this season. Then they've got Everton at home, which will be a challenge. And it's that double game week, which we've all been relatively excited about because of the Liverpool assets, but not really about the West Ham assets. And that's because they're playing Leicester and Liverpool in that game. So we haven't really talked too heavily about those West Ham assets. It's Brighton and Manchester City after that. Perhaps a few people might be looking at their player with their highest percentage, which is Winston Reid, actually, Tom, for West Ham. I know we talked about it for Watford, but Winston Reid is the most owned West Ham player at this particular moment in time, 4.8% ownership for the 3.9 million man. I don't know what you think, Anthony, about the West Ham assets and David Moyes.
So watching that West Ham team, I think who stood out to me really, aside from the, let's say, defenders and goalkeeper who are looking quite good for the double game week, maybe were Philippe Anderson and Sebastian Allais. Allais was well known for being particularly good in the box and particularly good at heading during his time at Eintracht Frankfurt. We haven't really seen all that much of that since he came into the Premier League. And so I'm interested to see how Moyes' cross-heavy, extremely structured game will work. And one of the players providing those crosses actually was Ryan Fredericks, who had a particularly good game at the weekend. And then just in behind Allaire was Philippe Anderson, who you've already noted already, but to score his first goal of the season on New Year's Day, when you consider that he's one of the few players in the league that are actually capable of probably getting double figures for both goals and assists. He didn't do it last season, but he showed the form to get there at times. It is quite interesting, and there is definitely a high ceiling there for him as the weeks go forward.
They've been very, very bad, and a byword for inconsistency, a byword for captain picks against, haven't they, this season? And indeed, inconsistency has been something which has rotted them for a long time. As you mentioned with Philippe Anderson, there was a while when he was really on it, a few people bought, and then he got good fixtures, and he was at the tail end of being on it, and he trolled people. He had 5 blanks in a row, despite having a nice fixture at the end of last season, or during the middle of last season. If you say the word crosses, and you look at the list, one man does stand out, Antonio, the man who has got the jumping reach of a chihuahua. But he is, over the last couple of seasons, he's been in and out of the team through injury, but he does have a decent goal scoring record behind him. It's just a case of whether it's going to work with him, because I think David Moyes went for a 4-4-1-1, I think I'm right in saying. Philippe Anderson moved to the number 10, Allaire doing the role he played at Frankfurt, as you said. Jovic was slightly behind him at Frankfurt, so Allaire will be doing the job of knocking it down to other players. It strikes me as a bit of a Jimenez almost, Allaire. It'll be a player who, if he is playing in a team which services him, will tick over. May not get kind of those explosive scores. Yeah, I kind of feel like it's Fabianski or bust with them right now while we wait and see what happens. There may be the likes of, you know, Balbuena at 4.3 could come back into the reckoning. But I think it would be a punt and nothing more than a punt given the nature of those fixtures if we did go for an Allaire or did go for an Antonio or did go for a Philippe Anderson, because at the moment we've got one game to judge it on. And obviously there's a lot of opportunity and everyone's hesitance in going for one of those players early, but I just don't think it's worth it for that double game week, is it really?
So far, it doesn't look like it, in fairness. Yeah, just even when you think about some of the players that have actually been popular from the West Ham side, even so far this season, there was a period where Allaire was in demand. There was also a period where Yarmolenko was in demand. And the fact that their ownership has dipped so low, I guess, highlights just how poor that West Ham have actually been, that even it's only the few ghost ships that are left that actually ended up with them. But speaking of players not to get rid of, Liverpool are definitely in that. They're the other team that are participating in the double game week in game week 24. And so we've got a lot of questions about that, including FPL Osimo, who asked if we should be loading up for the double game week and which 3 assets we should pick. Martin SE5 asked also if Virgil van Dijk is worth our consideration. FPL JK was asking if the double defense or the double attack was better. And FPL Chancer has been asking about doubling up at the back and whether it's a requirement after yet another Liverpool clean sheet. So what do we think, guys?
I hesitate to say it's an interesting one, but I think it definitely is. Annoyingly, Adam Hopcroft tweeted something similar to what I'm about to say, which always seems to happen with him. God damn you, Adam. But I noted that looking at Salah and Mane, it was obviously the argument that one, these players are both too expensive to buy. You're investing 24 million versus 14 million. And before we get into it, I completely understand the case for Robertson and TAA. Just consider this, though. Last calendar year, Sadio Mane scored 25 goals. Salah assisted none of them. Last year, Salah scored 19 goals. Mane assisted two of them. So I think that it really is a case of one or the other. It's not really a case of looking at them both and saying, well, one can cover the other. Like, they're both going to get their hauls and get their hauls independently, individually, which is quite interesting, actually, if you think about it. Robbo and TAA, just for the record, assisted nine of Mane's goals together, but only four. And I think that is why Mala, a portmanteau that I'm not going to apologise for using, is such a sword. I think a lot of managers said it's going to take you a lot of surgery to get there. It's going to take you, you're going to have to take massive hits. You're going to have to take minus 12 like some nut jobs do. And Andrew Ferguson said on the Hubcast that I was on last week that you can't have your Mane and Salah as well as Rashford, Vardy, KDB and TAA. But guess what? I do. And there's also an element of kind of a captaincy confusion, which I find a bit irrational, actually. Just captain the one that you captain if you just owned one. So I think that really managers are going to be looking, and it completely makes sense if you are doing it, to go for TAA and Robbo, like I'm sure Nick's going to do. But I think that because it'll be very difficult for the managers to get to that kind of double up of the midfielders, it could be a really, really strong sword for you to have those two. And the data does not seem to suggest the idea that you'll be able to build an ultimate team with just one of Mo or Mane and be able to cover the other one. It really looks like their returns are individual. But the case for the defence, I'm guessing, is about to come from Nick. What are you looking at, Nick? I'm guessing it is Robbo and TAA all the way.
Actually, it's not, Tom. So,
what?
Obviously, Liverpool have been the team of the week, but they've also been the team of the year. They've been the team of the year all year, haven't they? And, answering a couple of the questions, Osmo said, should we be loading up for the double game week? And definitely be loading up straight away, not just for the double game week. You know, if I could own four players, I would. But unfortunately, I think I'm actually thinking about the double attack. I found a way into it. I think it's fear of Salah. I've already got Mane. I've got Trent now, but I feel with Salah, I just want him as well. And if I can make it happen, I will make it happen. And it's relatively easy for me to do it. As I said, I can do Rashford to Dominic Calvert-Lewin, and that frees up me to do Ali to Salah. So why not? Why not go for the Salah-Mane combo and still keep the likes of KDB and Vardy and Trent and all these other assets that I've got, which I'm happy with, like Maddison as well. So I think it's just a bit more exciting to go for the attack. But to answer the questions, I mean, that's just my personal decision. Liverpool have really improved at the back. You know, they're going to get plenty of clean sheets. They just look brilliant, don't they? Every game week, they look absolutely brilliant. And again, Andrew Robertson really impressed, particularly this week. He was top for defenders for chances created with five, picked up an assist and some bonus points, as well as the clean sheet, proving himself another fantastic FPL asset, as we all knew from last season. And now he's up to 98 points. So him and Trent now firmly the top two scoring defenders, finally, as we all kind of predicted at the beginning of the season, they would be. So it's hard for me to say, oh, you should be doubling up at the back or you should be doubling up in the midfield. I think it very much depends on how your team's currently set up, who you can afford to get rid of and who you can afford to bring in. But I do think it is possible to do the double ups of Salah and Mane, as you alluded to, Tom, and still keep all of your best FPL assets. So I think we all know the underlying stats for the players, but I think Liverpool is essential. It's just, you know, staying in the middle and avoiding the scrutiny if I get it wrong. But it's up to you, really, in terms of your setup and whether the double midfield or the double defence works.
So I've been also obviously considering this whole entire double game week shenanigans with Liverpool and whether or where to double up, really, is the question. It's not whether to, it's where to double up, and it's whether it is defence or whether it is Salah and Mane. That's, I think, effectively what the choice really comes down to. Someone asked, it was Martin SE5 asked if Virgil van Dijk is worth consideration. And I think really the answer is no. And as you can really justify cutting your cloth that little bit thinner on the likes of Trent Alexander-Arnold or Andrew Robertson. Whereas when I look at that Liverpool team, I'm like, okay, Wolves away, West Ham away. Those are the two games in that double game week. Can they keep a clean sheet in both of those? And I think the answer is probably likely to be yes. However, do I think that the likes of Sadio Mane or Mo Salah could score one in both of those games? I think the answer is probably also yes. And I think it's more likely that both of those players will score one goal than one of the defenders will get one clean sheet. And so with that in mind, I think right now I'm trending towards just picking up the two attackers and be done with it. One of them will also be captained as well, obviously. So you have to factor that into the account as well when you consider the possible points ramifications on that. So that's how I'm feeling. It'll probably be part, one of the big reasons why I wildcard will be to try and have two Liverpool attackers, those being Mala or Sané, as we could call it too, which would cause utter confusion.
So why went that way with the
yeah.
No, that's a bit of a cheeky back heel actually. I wasn't expecting that. I was expecting at least one of you to be like, oh come on, the defense is so much better because you get better value for your money and it's really obvious you've got to do that. Excellent. It's good to have some variety on who got the assist compared to just everyone agreeing. I'm not sure about VVD. I think that there is worth a shout. Last year, for example, Laporte did a crazy job in double game weeks, didn't he? Obviously they're not the same player and City aren't the same team, but he'll definitely play and has an obvious goal threat as shown by his random brace not long ago. But as you say, I think my judgment was that really, if they are scoring goals individually without really helping each other out, yeah, I think that having those two midfielders is probably the best way of doing it. I guess for me, the guiding principle, I was speaking to Flapjack and a few others about this earlier on, is who are you most scared of? Who are you most scared of not owning? And I think, Nick, you were bricking it about Salah all of the game against Sheffield United, weren't you? And I think that that's definitely should be a bit of a governing factor here for a lot of people, especially if you can fit the double midfielders in. There's no reason why you shouldn't, I don't think.
No, I think I know perfectly you're probably going to be triple captaining Salah in that particular game week, and you won't be alone doing that triple captain. And I think just not owning him at all is just going to be too frightening. You can see my season just being torn apart before my very own eyes. And I know Robertson's pretty good as well, and a lot of managers will be owning him for that game week, but they're unlikely to be captaining him. And I think it's a bit boring, but you know, to try and cover Salah by at least having him in my team, even though I'm probably going to stick with Mane and give him the captaincy. I think I'd really like to get Salah in my team as well, and if I can make it happen, I'm going to make it happen, I think.
As we trend towards a break and then the features section, it is worth remembering all of the wonderful centre-back performances in double game weeks. The likes of Laporte last season as mentioned, I guess David De Gea benefited from defensive points the season before that, and Shane Duffy last season.
Yeah, don't forget Ben Gibson.
It's just Nick captain in one time, and they even shout about it.
In a double game week, 18 points. I think a few people captain Negredo that time.
I was on Negredo, and it's one of those things I'll never forget. Double game weeks.
Absolute killer. Absolute killer. Was it Harry Kane as well that year as well, when he was ill one game, came on
and then goals. Remember it was an injury. There was a picture. It was actually around Christmas time, wasn't it?
Yeah, he had man flu.
Yeah.
He got some, he was unable to talk for a while. Very, very, very bad. But yeah, I think really summing up the section, the reality is that it is pretty much just whatever suits your team and however you judge the situation to be best. Nick mentioned a minute ago, the TC at the moment is on Mo Salah for me. If it comes to game week 24, just because I've been waiting for 3 years to triple captain Mo Salah, probably wrongly, I probably should have captained him against Watford when he scored a hat-trick and got an assist there not a couple of years ago on a blank. But yeah, I think he'll get the TC, so maybe that's another thing to bear in mind, the effective ownership, which may go up. I think we should take a break there, shouldn't we, and move on to the feature section.
Who got the assist?
So we're back and it's time for our features. This week it's the Market Forces. It's a final over 30s update until March. It's the beginning of a new feature called Stag's Take, and it's Dad Watch. So let's start with Market Forces. Nick Shreve, you're the man on the touchline. Can tell us what's going on?
So it's all about the forwards at the moment. What with the two most transferred out players at the moment being Kane and Vardy. Kane, obviously, he's done his hamstring in, so all the managers that owned him are selling him 230,000 transfers out this particular moment in time. And Vardy, having missed a couple of games, he's got a yellow flag. He's expected back from his calf injury, but some managers have seen enough and said, right, that's it. I'm getting rid of this guy despite his prolific goal-scoring record over the course of the season. And apparently 160,000 managers have sold him, which seems perhaps a little bit foolish, what with their next few games coming up. But the man being bought most heavily is Danny Ings, good old Danny boy. We all thought he wouldn't be able to play every game over Christmas. How wrong were we? He's now got 13 goals, unbelievably, for the season and one assist. So he's even starting to look like he can compete for the Golden Boot, believe it or not. maybe not. But yeah, who's not to say? I mean, we've not owned him all season. Perhaps it's going to be one of our mistakes of the season. I don't know. But 6.7 million, I think he can fit in quite nicely in most people's teams now as sort of a third forward. And I said they had a tough fixture run, but he's proved himself against the likes of Spurs. Not too challenging, to be honest, this season. And Southampton's fixtures are going to start picking up soon. So, yeah, I think the manager's interested in Danny Ings. I know, Tom, you're more of a... Well, you brought in more pay, but are you looking at Ings at all?
If I can fit him in, I will. I'm also very, very worried that the moment I buy him, he's going to go straight to hospital. So I'm not too sure whether I will be buying him anytime soon. I obviously, he and James Maddison is in third at the moment. Are the two big misses, I think, in my team, who are beginning to get a bit worrying week to week. So, yeah, I may have to cook up some sort of plan while I'm away to buy him. Maybe you'll see a minus eight that's been taking at a stupid hour of night and text me saying, "Will you smash?" And I'd be like, "Yeah, mate, yeah, Ings in."
Well, yeah, he's probably
Ings out for weeks due to breaking his glass ankle.
Well, yeah, it'll be the other way around, won't it? If it's middle of the night in the UK, it'll be your morning and you'll be like, you'll be pretending to be smashed, but in fact, you just made it over a sort of an anxious breakfast, perhaps. but Ings, the most transferred in player this game week, 175,000 transfers in, but also Aubameyang, 90,000 transfers, and Calvert-Lewin also over 90,000 transfers, making up the fourth and fifth most transferred in players. But as you mentioned, Maddison, third most transferred in player. This game, 100,000 managers in, have transferred him in. And Jack Grealish, another man you sold there, 110,000 transfers in after that fantastic performance at the weekend. The sellers, so Danny Dele Alli is being sold quite heavily. He's got Liverpool up next, and Spurs were pretty atrocious against Southampton, 140,000 transfers out. And also Mason Mount, who also has been relatively quiet in recent weeks, only one assist in the last six games and no goals at all. So his early goal scoring form has really dried up recently.
Yeah, so quite a lot going on in the market. And not surprising, except for that Vardy sale. I think that's going to hurt a few people. I know he's had a couple of blanks. I know that makes sense to sell him if you just look at the last couple of games. But those people must have lost so much value in Vardy by selling him in a sort of whiplash sort of way. So, yeah, I'm not too sure about that at all. But there it goes. All right, final over 30s update then. They're down to 2 million now. They haven't done very well over Christmas just because they've been impeded by the fact that they can only sign players over 30. That means that we're a bit constricted on who we can own. And it means, yeah, this week particularly has not been particularly good. So 36 points. Schmeichel and Evans, the defensive double up for Leicester, doing an okay job. João Moutinho again getting an assist. That guy has been a quiet assassin, really, in terms of just generating points in a drip feed basis over the course of the season. But other than that, nothing. Toby and Vertonghen at the back both blanked. Tompkins, the goal scoring hero from a couple of weeks ago, blanked. David Silva did nothing. Aguero was rested. And Vardy not playing. Aubameyang was the vice again. Only got two doubled. And Mesut Ozil also did nothing. So yeah, 36 points, not particularly good.
So you're surely going to have to pick up an in-form Noble after his performance this week.
Yeah, maybe. I'll see if I can remember, if I remember the password for this team, or if my social fan member can help me over the course of the time I'm away. But to replace the over 30s, we've come up with something novel, something new. So Stagger, as you may know, writes a very, very well-received column every week for RotoWorld, and he's bringing that sharp insight to the pod every week by picking up on a relevant point that maybe we've all missed, maybe we should be redressing. So Stag, take it away. What have you noticed this week?
So if you've listened to this podcast over the last 40 minutes or so, I presume that have gone by, or if you have just, you know, been paying attention to Twitter, you'll notice that there's one team that's not being talked about, and that is Manchester City. They are by far and away the best team in terms of expected returns in assists, clean sheets, goals, etc. over the course of this season, and yet we continue to ignore them. Right now, they have a very good run coming up up to the double game week. They've Aston Villa away. That's an Aston Villa who are dealing with Tom Heaton and Wesley out going forward. Crystal Palace at home and then Sheffield United away. They also have Aymeric Laporte nearing a return. However, probably not in game week 22, as the player himself has warned fantasy managers specifically that if we brought him in now, we may be disappointed. At the same time, up front, it's Gabriel Jesus and Raheem Sterling, who are both doing particularly well in attacking returns. They're third and seventh overall, respectively, for XG over the course of the last six game weeks, whereas Kevin De Bruyne is continuing to churn out chances created and is still a must own based on the last six game weeks, as he has been based on the whole entire season. It is actually notable once looking at those chances created of the last six game weeks that Emi Buendia is miles ahead of everyone in terms of chances created over the last six game weeks on 31. Kevin De Bruyne, for just to give you an idea, is fourth in that metric with just 19. And then Kevin De Bruyne and Riyad Mahrez are both joint top over that course of that same period for big chances created with 4. So City, good with good fixtures, with something to play for in that their top four place is not under threat, but Leicester are certainly going to threaten their second place for the foreseeable future. And the Champions League is not quite around the corner yet to screw them. So City players, I think we should be considering them. That's the tea, guys.
Fantastic. Yeah, I think there's some really good points there on Manchester City assets. They're definitely flying under the radar a little bit at this particular moment in time. And, you know, the likes of Jesus, Mahrez, Sterling, for instance, could really smash it whilst we're all kind of like looking at, you know, focused so heavily on fitting in all these Liverpool assets. They're definitely flying under the radar. Go on, Tom. Jump in.
I was going to say that I think the reason we're not really interested in City players, apart from maybe Sterling, as well as KDB, most people own, is just the minutes. That's the key. So Mahrez has played 990 minutes or so, which works out about 52% of the available time. And obviously the Jesus and Kun Aguero rotation going on. I mean, really, I completely understand where all the data is and how that kind of works out. But I mean, apart from KDB and apart from Sterling, I'm just not too sure where the interest is. So, and if you've got, I think the double game week is probably the source of what's obscuring things, because Sterling is the only player that you get. To get Sterling, you have to go without a Mane or a Salah, realistically. So maybe that's where the opportunity lies, isn't it? Is having those players and backing City, as you say, that the numbers are off the charts in terms of the team data compared to Liverpool. It's just whether kind of the realpolitik of the situation with the double game week may mean that's kind of what happened. I mean, Laporte, when he's back, will something make that defence a lot more interesting if we get a resolution between who the main striker is, between Aguero and Jesus in the Premier League, then that's really interesting. But as it stands, it still seems to me that it's between Sterling and De Bruyne and no one else really in City, because if you've got someone else, you're basically looking at your first sub coming on a lot of the time, or loads of one pointers unless you get lucky and they start and then you get a 10. It's going to be very kind of a lot of boom and bust, but we don't tend to like that sort of pure managers, do we?
No, we do not. That is pretty much with City players all the time, that we're always trying to figure out what to do with them. And so I guess it is the likes of Sterling specifically. And maybe you're looking further back at the David Silva, who's had a pretty big long rest over the last while with injuries, etc. And he may be in line to start continuously like he had been earlier in the season also.
Maybe Phil Foden be blooded, who knows? Mm-hmm. Right. And finally, Nick, how's your dad doing?
With my dad, unfortunately, he has been a little bit of a fall from grace from sort of the house days at the beginning of the season, where he was right up there in the sort of the top 5k in terms of overall rank. But unfortunately, he had another red arrow this game week at 50 points, which means that I've actually overtaken him now. And so, yeah, a bit of a struggle for him in terms of his FPL season, dropping a little bit in terms of overall rank. But, you know, the likes of Madison got him some points there, 11 points in there. Stags, anti-man or man, Richarlison also picking up a 7-pointer there, sort of helping him out a little bit. But I think his the absence of Vardy and Pookie also hitting him quite hard in terms of returns in recent weeks, at least. So time to shift things up, I think, for my dad to try and recover his season.
Yeah, I think it's always difficult when you go into seasons mode on the world-class setting when you've come from a semi-pro setting. So maybe you're seeing a reversion to type or a regression to the norm of what we'd expect from a first-time manager. But who knows, maybe you'll pick it up. All right, let's take a break there and move on to the questions.
Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
So we're back and it's time to catch up with the Who Got the Assist mini league. And if you want to join a league, the league code is EIKX03, and it is possible to do a proper league update for a change, because the website's fully updated now, so we can see exactly what's happening. And at top of the league this week is Mut Abdul Islam, who's been having a really good season with his team Spartacus. He's overall rank 71st at this particular moment in time, number one in Bangladesh. Yeah, having a really good season, 60 pointers, another decent week, above average week for him there. You know, the likes of Trent Alexander-Arnold, Mane, Grealish, Danny Ings, of course, all doing the business for him this particular week. So, well done, Mud. Second, though, dropping down into second, is Declan Rinn with the Wesley Crushers, only 54 points for him. But if we run through the top 10, our good friend on Twitter, MJ, Monil Javeri, having a really good season. He's in third in our league with the Kop. He's up to 186 at the moment in time. 70-pointer, very good week for him. Fourth is Kieran Screeton, pain in the vase. Fifth is Brian Evans with his team, Chupacabra. Sixth, Luke Burgess with Lukewarm FC. Seventh, Neil Thompson with Venky's out. Eight, FPL Lewis, another Twitter friend, return of the snag. Ninth is Gaten DeBakker, Red Zami. And tenth is Christina Hogseth with Tanta Bassa. All of the top 10 there within the top 1K in the world. So well done, guys. All the guys that are doing really well in our mini league at the moment.
Very notably, actually, down at 178th in the mini league as I rushed through to have a look at other people. There's a guy, Andrew Sims, who got 92 points this game week. That was a game week rank of 1048th, which saw him launched from obscurity at about 75k, where I would kill to be, to about 15.9k. So that's a fantastic return for Andrew, who had the standout returns in the top 200 this week.
Wow, that's really good, yeah. So there you go, Sack. One good week, and suddenly your fortune is going to be reversed. Unfortunately, I'm sitting in my chair, so you're probably going to find that one goal you need will never happen. It'll hit the post, it'll fall over on his arse, and he's for on goal.
It's all VAR.
I know. Just blame Liverpool. Right, anyway, we're not going to talk about that. Instead, we're going to answer some listener questions. Thank you again for all of them. There's so many of them. The first one this week is an interesting one. It's from FPL Sports Scientist, who asks, if game week 25 is a good time to wildcard if you dead-end your team into the 24 double game week. So earlier on, like Staggy mentioned, maybe wildcarding a little bit early if you're in the situation that you're in. And I think this kind of comes to basically saying, right, if you're not sure about West Ham, you're not sure about Liverpool, just put aside those reservations and buy those players just thinking, well, you know, game week 24, double game week, I'm going to have five or six of them, ruin my team, basically set up for that week. And then after that, wildcards, and then suddenly kind of, you know, engage FPL manager mode, as you put it, as Stag, and just play the rest of the season without your wildcard. I mean, let's widen this a little bit to saying, is there any merit in wildcarding now? Because obviously the prevailing idea is that no, you've got to wait and you've got to just see what news sort of emerges from the likes of Ben Crellin and the Premier League. But the reality is, I think there is a bit of an option there. Nick, what do you reckon to this?
I mean, personally, I don't think it is a necessity to dead end your team into game week 24. I think you can do it and manage game week 24 without putting yourself in a situation where you're going to be forced to wildcard in game week 25, for instance. Obviously, with the triple Liverpool, there would be no need to personally to wildcard any of those guys out after game week 24. What with their next fixtures? They've actually got a really decent fixture run after game week 24, starting with Southampton and Norwich. So I certainly wouldn't be selling any of those guys. And I think 24, I don't think you need to be like thinking, oh, I'm going to load up on West Ham players just for that game week and then wildcard them 25 as I want to get rid of them straight away, just because West Ham's fixtures aren't great. And, you know, there's going to be plenty of single game week players, for instance, that will probably outscore most of their assets. You know, obviously the Leicester players, but also, you know, the likes of Everton, who have, you know, quite a nice run of fixtures, and Newcastle at home in game week 24. I'd actually personally prefer to own Everton players for that game week than I would West Ham players. So for me, I'm still standing by the wait and wild card as late as possible when you've got as much information from the likes of Ben Crellin, and we know who the double game weeks are going to be and when the blanks are, etc., etc. So I think that's the advice I would give, is just probably hold off on your wild card, plan your transfers accordingly towards game week 24, so you're not forced to wild card early.
So I think that question from Sports Scientist or FPL Sports Scientist is quite interesting, because it's going to be pretty hard to dead end a team when there's a double game week that features just two teams, unless you triple up on West Ham players, in which case you're going to need much more than a wild card. You're probably going to need to get your head checked as well. So I don't think that's even possible. But kind of taking the broader concept of the question, which is looking at wild cards in general around now, I think there's strong arguments to wildcard around now if you're in mediocre land like I am at 1.3 odd million at the moment. There's huge arguments to kick into FPL manager mode after a wildcard and then just start to build towards the double game weeks. Ben Crellin expects us to know about the double game weeks the later double game weeks in approximately a month, once we know about the FA Cup fifth round and also the EFL Cup final. But I think you should be able to manage it if you do wildcard now, as long as you don't go absolutely insane and pick players that are never going to be helpful in a double game week situation. You should be fine.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think that, I mean, at the moment, as far as we know, we've got this double game week coming up, which looks like the TC potentially. It looks like Leicester could potentially have a double game week in game week 28 if they get to the EFL Cup final, I believe. But it looks like the big double is going to be 37. There's not going to be two big doubles this year, as far as we know. There's going to be one blank, as always, for FA Cup and cup-related kind of stuff, which is when the free hit's going to be used. The 37 is going to be your bench boost or whatever. And either the 24 double game week, or if another game double game week emerges, those are going to be the prime spots, perhaps, to use your TC if you haven't used it already. I'm not doing as badly as you. That sounds really horrible, Stag, but I'm not doing my mediocrity is less mediocre than yours is, put it that way. 569k or something like that.
Cheers, Jeff.
But this week I did seriously consider wildcarding. I didn't go for it in the end because I wanted to keep it just in case. But I really think that a lot of the time the people dispensing the advice, like your Nicholas there, are people who are doing very, very well. So obviously they're going to be keeping the wildcard. There's no point in them spaffing their wildcard now. Whereas if you are in mediocre land and you want to be getting yourself back to a situation where you're feeling a bit more respectable about your rank, about your FPL, I don't see any reason why you wouldn't be thinking about your wildcard pretty seriously. Just because, you know, you're probably going to be a little bit either behind the template, you're going to be on the template now, whereas everybody else who's above you was on the template a couple of weeks ago. So you want to be kind of taking a few more risks and getting a few low-end players, like the Watford guys we spoke about, for example, to try to do something to improve your rank. I can't, it's obviously a calculated risk, but I completely understand that. And like a lot of the time as well, a lot of the arguments against the wildcard earlier, just, you're going to have to take lots of hits, you're going to have to do this, you're going to have to do that. Well, so what? You know, plan it. Take some hits if you need to. That's not the worst thing in the world, is take a -4 if you have to just kind of set yourself a game week 37. Like, if you want right now to take advantage of a few things that are going on, then do it. The beauty actually of Liverpool having that double game week in 24 is that they also then have a very, very nice run of fixtures, actually. So after the 24 double game week, they have Southampton, Norwich, West Ham, Watford and Bournemouth over that five. I mean, obviously there's going to be a lot of rotation and stuff, but the core of that triple Liverpool now is going to set you up for quite a long time, isn't it, really? So yeah, I mean, I think there's ample reason to wildcard now. It's just whether you're willing to take the plunge, kind of go the rest of the season without that chip.
Yeah, like the fact of the matter is, what's scaring people from wildcarding now is the idea of having to take hits later. But the fact of the matter is, if you're considering a wildcard now, like me, you're probably doing so bad that you're going to end up taking hits anyway to fix mistakes you're going to make. So you might as well just do the wildcard now, accept the pain of having to overmanage later, and maybe thrive off that. I often find that in FPL, I do particularly well if I barely think about what I'm doing, or if I really think extremely hard and look at every single statistic for what I'm doing. If I'm somewhere in the middle, things start to go badly, and I've been in the middle far too often this season, and maybe wildcarding will kind of force me between a rock and a hard place and just force all that like hyper research 5 days a week to, with every transfer I make, to really thrive. So I'm probably going to go for it.
Nice. Oh, it definitely makes some good pod fare, won't it? Right, the next thing, Spurs getting Spursy. So Planview asks how appealing Spurs assets are sans Harry Kane. Is Dele now of interest? And Samant Natkar asks if he should be looking to get rid of Ali and Aurier. Nick, resident Spurs fan, what's your view? Should we be a sell right now on your lads?
So unfortunately, I was doubled up for Spurs for the last few game weeks, and it has been pretty poor in terms of their performances, and particularly disappointing that last game against Southampton, which they lost. And surprisingly, to be honest, like, I've owned Dele Alli for the last five or so game weeks, and I didn't even realise it, but he's only actually got one return in the last five. I thought he was doing a little bit better than that, but it is just the one return, that one goal against Brighton. Yeah, and his form has dropped off a little bit after that, you know, boost to his game that he got, the new manager coming in and sort of Jose bring Dele Alli back from the brink of being very absent for the last 18 months or so. With Kane out, perhaps it means that Dele's now going to be of interest, but it'll be interesting how Mourinho lines up Spurs with Kane absence, because obviously Son's now back as well. It's worth highlighting he's been suspended for the last few games, but whenever Kane would be injured under Pochettino, Son would play in that number nine position. So it'll be very interesting to see what approach Mourinho takes with the Spurs lineup, and if he puts Son in that number nine and Ali stays as sort of, you know, the number 10 slash secondary striker role that he started to adopt under the new manager. So I think for me, it's probably, unfortunately, as much as it pains me to say, it's probably time to consider selling the Spurs assets, even though they've got sort of a weird fixture run, as in it's Liverpool next and it's Watford and Norwich, which you'd like to think that the Spurs players could do well against in those games, and it's Manchester City, which is another tough fixture.
Yeah, no, certainly. I agree with that completely. And I think the kind of return of Son is going to be very interesting. So Mourinho said earlier on this week, the squad is going to be the same squad as it was in pre-season, and they're going to have to find solutions within it, which probably means that they're not going to be buying anyone in the January transfer window. And I think Son is probably going to be the solution for the Kane-less team. He'll be like Alan Smith in his prime, push up to number nine, a role that we know he can fulfil and fulfil well. Worth mentioning that Son's ownership has now gone down to 5.8% after that red card. It was about 20-25%, I think, before that red card kicked in, with many of us, including myself, thinking he'd be the captain over Christmas for Brighton, Norwich and Southampton. I think that him returning to the team is going to be of great interest, with or without the central defensive midfielder Kane. So it could well be that Son is a very good example of a player who you could be looking to introduce on your wild card, or introduce as a big differential, maybe on the same lines as that ignorance of Man City that you were getting at earlier, Stag. Maybe Son could be another nice one there to a low-owned opportunity, perhaps.
Yeah, you identify Son there as the player to buy, and I'm just not convinced that he's going to play in that number nine role. I think what we've already seen so far this season, that Kane has often been dropped back, and it's been Ali who's been playing in that forward role. And I think what you may find is this is a chance for Christian Eriksen or Gio Lo Celso to probably get further game time, perhaps in that number 10 role, and Son will fit in on the side. Just doesn't seem fully like a Mourinho thing to do, to put him in at number nine and move Ali to where the 10 position again. I think he's been doing quite well in that slightly further up role, and I think Mourinho's going to double down on his finishing rather than restraining him further.
Yeah, I mean, 150,000 people have sold Ali. Now, do you think that they could have cause to regret that this week then?
Yeah, probably, but I'll probably be one of them too. It'll be 150,001. But I think that there is definitely an argument that they will be made to rue that decision. I think there's Spurs, a bit like United, are very Jekyll and Hyde so far this season, rather fittingly. And so it's just so hard to know how they'll do. Like, on paper, at least, the game against Liverpool sounds like near impossible, and seems like a good week to just move them out, have a look and see where Son plays, and work out what is Mourinho's approach going forward without Harry Kane, probably for a few weeks at minimum, and then go from there.
Yeah, be interesting to see what GLC can do. I think Eriksen's obviously the go-to guy in the past, but it sounds like he's making noises that he wants to go. He's told the club apparently he wants to go. Wouldn't be surprised to see him sold for something in this transfer window. And yeah, GLC
he's,
to assume
he's very
that.
Much playing like somebody who wants to go as well. He was pretty inspiring at the weekend. Yeah,
playing like I'm podcasting, mentally checked out. Right, the next thing then, DCL. I think we've spoken about him a little bit. So Jake Cope and Brian Cahill. I think that we've already answered your question pretty much. So we're going to skip over that one. And move on to the next one, which is fourth and fifth mids. So FPLDC asks, is Cantwell, my cousin Todd, now readopted into the family after performing well, the real deal? And FPL Sizz asks about Traore and Shelvey, you know, these sorts of guys around the edges. How interested are we in these sorts of individuals? Nick, what do you reckon to these? I guess midfielders around below the 6 million, I guess below Grealish and below Sarr, so it has to be below the 6 million. Is there anything there in the dregs?
So I still think, yeah, probably cousin Todd's the man to talk about. You want that sort of player around that price. He's only he's less than 5 million, he's 4.9 at this moment in time. He has been sort of the bargain midfielder of the season. If you're not going to play with a five man midfield, I've actually got a five man midfield at the moment, with Grealish being the cheapest of the five, then yeah, Cantwell will be the player that you want to come off the bench, and when you've got an absent, and you know, a lot of people picked up Cantwell points this game week, 10 points in fact, because of the Vardy injury. So I think he's definitely sort of the man. I don't know if, in terms of the real deal, how he will press on in terms of his actual career. Links with the likes of Arsenal and Spurs are starting to appear in the media, but he's certainly you know, been a really bright spark for Norwich. And yeah, I think a player that can fit in very nicely on your bench as sort of a fifth midfielder, or perhaps even playing week in, week out, and, you know, allow you to afford, you know, those premium assets, you know, those premium setups that we've been discussing. Yeah, and I think Traore another player that's, you know, impressed quite a lot over the course of the season. He has been the sort of a one-trick pony in the past. He's put in some really good performances, especially against Manchester City. And I think he's certainly won the caught your eye, didn't he, Tom, having transferred him in?
Yeah, I transferred him in really as a foil for Jimenez. I know that sounds a bit silly, but they had Watford, Newcastle and Southampton. He was 5.5 at the time. And I thought, well, you know, him, Grealish for him basically freed up the money that I needed to get TA. And I noticed as well that he's actually, according to Who Scored, he's the most informed player in the Premier League at the moment. He smashed Andros Townsend's record for successful dribbles in the last game against Watford without actually getting any points. I think there were two assists he could have got, but he didn't get. So quite a tricky sort of area, which is really just basically ruled by my cousin. I'm not too sure about the rest of the players. There's a lot of kind of discarded has-beens, the likes of McGinn. Shelby's actually crocs Voldemort, so I'm not too sure about him. James Ward-Prowse actually could be of interest down there too, but not too consistent. If you are looking for consistency, one man I do kind of like, I know Sam from FA Family's had him in her team for ages, is Joao Moutinho. He's got 6 assists this season, actually, and he scored a goal as well. On a lot of the set pieces for Wolves, never present. If you want someone to just tick over, he could be your man. But yeah, it really is slim pickings down there, isn't it, Stag?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I have Cantwell, have had him since his early form, and will continue to hold him at this point. I think I'm just going to accept that I'm playing a 5-man midfield going forward, with Cantwell being the 5th of those, because there are no better option than him at that sub-6 bracket that we were speaking about, for me anyway. However, moving on from Cantwell and looking further back at the teams, FPL Jag is asking about Diego Rico and what should we do with him going forward. Nick, do you have anything to say about Rico?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, he's been a sort of 4-4-5 defender on my bench the whole season. He's actually, I think he's actually, apart from David Button, he's the only ever present in my squad now, having sort of swapped Trent Alexander-Arnold in and out for a terrible 24-pointer. Rico stands as that only ever present. And, you know, I stupidly brought in Matt Target. He's probably first on the list in terms of the sales for my defence. Rico stays despite that -1-pointer and just Bournemouth being absolutely diabolical recently. I think he stays. And, you know, just looking at Bournemouth's fixtures, they have been horrendous. As we said, they've got lots of injuries, but their fixture run's pretty decent. Watford at home, Norwich away, Brighton at home, Aston Villa at home, Sheffield United away. You know, even a shocking Bournemouth might be able to pick up a couple of clean sheets in those games. Maybe, you know, he can be a man that can come in as a 12th or 13th. And I bought him at 4.0 million, so there's not really anyone that I really want to bring in at that price point. You could say the same about Martin Kelly as you could about Rico, considering the recent performances for Crystal Palace as well. Defensively, I think the only person I mentioned perhaps is Holgate, if I could afford it, but I think at the moment there are probably bigger fires to put out than Rico.
I agree about it. They're probably being bigger fires to put out than Rico. I think we're moving from a period where your bench was incredibly important, and I think people are sensitized to looking at their first and second bencher and thinking, there's a good chance this guy's going to come on, or those guys are going to come on. The reality in the regular season is that doesn't really happen very much. I think that you kind of, I don't know what the frequency of using your first bench would be, probably something about a third of the time at most. And reality is that Rico and Kelly, although they're players that in an ideal world you want to replace with Holgate and, I don't know, someone like maybe Charlie Taylor or Kiko or Cathcart or something like that, they are players who are going to do a job for you, which is they're going to come off the bench okay. And Rico himself, -1, I luckily avoided that -1 this week as the Lord John Lundstram played. But, I mean, they've got a really good run of fixtures, Bournemouth coming up, Watford, Norwich, Brighton and Aston Villa, 3 out of 4 at home. You've got to be thinking that Honest Eddie's going to get a word through to them and get them going again, right? Like, I can't see Allardyce or something moving to Sandbanks and they're getting them set up. Maybe they'll get Harry Redknapp in or something like that to help them out. But like at the moment, it's just one of those things that if you've got nothing better to do, then maybe, and you've got 2 free transfers, you've got a great first 11, and you're kind of thinking, oh, I don't know, I've got a bit of money to spend, then maybe I'd be looking at getting Holgate for Rico or something like that. But I mean, really, is that kind of, if that's the biggest fire in your team, then I'm pretty jealous of your team, I suppose.
Yeah, maybe speaking about Eddie Howe and Bournemouth for a second, I don't see him getting sacked. Like, they've been ravaged by injuries, and I think
and
they've also had patches of poor form in every other season, perhaps never as long as this, which Howe has found a way to overcome in previous years. I think I saw that this is the first time in 2 years that they're in the relegation zone, so this is the most dangerous situation they've found themselves in recent memory. So we shall see. I think personally, a bit like you guys, Rico is, if you're trying to move on Rico, that's a pretty minor problem that you have in your team. He's second or third on your bench fodder most of the time, and there's bigger problems to solve with the double game week to come.
So our final question is, it's one for you actually, Tom, and it's from Mars, and he's asked you, are you really going to be off Twitter? So I'm sure you've got an answer that Sarah will want you to hear, and perhaps a real answer, I don't know.
No, I've got a real answer, which is that 2.5 years, 32,000 followers, more than 150 tweets a day is the average. I think that I'm finally Twittered out now. I think I've had enough. Like, I see things happening over the course of the weekend, and it doesn't like, you know, really affect me, but it does annoy me. Like, I can feel myself getting a little bit kind of like, oh, it's all just a cycle. I saw this last week, I saw this the week before, and you can tell you're getting fatigued with something, can't you? And I think, of course, I love Twitter and love the community. It's really kept me going for a long while. And I think there's time for me to take a little bit of a break, have a couple of months off. I'm sure it won't explode without me. I'll definitely be off Twitter. I'll remove it unless I'm, you know, given a bat signal and I really need to get back for some sort of WGTA emergency, but I hugely doubt it. The reality is that probably best for me to have a little break, as it always is a good idea to have a little break if you're bored of it or you've had too much of it. But yeah, it's been 2.5 great years, but I'm finally gonna delete the app on the 7th or the 8th of January when I set off, and that'll be it for a couple of months. I'll keep up to date with you guys, of course, but yeah, in terms of the wider scheme of things, I don't think I'm going to be tweeting.
And we'll still be posting the pods on the Twitter as well, so it won't be completely dead.
We've moved from a man who's tweeted 78,800 times in 2.5 years to me, who's tweeted 12,600 times in 3.5 years. So it's, you're going to see a dramatic drop, I would imagine, in tweets, but we will be there.
Cool. All right, let's move on to the transfers and captains then. So obviously we've got a little while to wait until the next game week, and obviously things may change. But as of now, 3rd of January, what do you guys reckon you're going to be looking at doing, and who's your captain going to be? Anthony, what do you reckon?
It's going to be a complete wipeout in my team. I think the longer I think about it, the more I think I'm going to wildcard. And so that leads to a totally different set of problems, which I'm probably going to have to work out as time goes on. But basically, it's going to boil down to me doing a wildcard and then working it out from there. But the obvious captaincy choices are Manchester United playing Norwich. That'd be Marcus Rashford. Nothing like another Manchester United disappointment. Or maybe one of the punts that I'd bring in my wild card, perhaps, such as one of the Watford players like Ismail Sarr away to Bournemouth, or maybe even an Arsenal player at Crystal Palace. Since he's arrived at the club, Nicolas Pepe has only scored at stadiums in London, and Crystal Palace is definitely in London. So,
I think for me, I've got it on Jamie Vardy at the moment. He's been sort of my auto-captain recently, even though he's not played the last couple of games, but my vice has been the captain, that's been Marcus Rashford. I might just leave it at that, to be honest. I might just go for Vardy, home to Southampton, and hope he can deliver the business. So I think I'm going for Vardy. I think at the moment we'll see if that changes with Rashford vice. In terms of my transfers, alluded to it a little bit, there's a sort of few things going on. I might do the goalkeeper swap, but I possibly will, with Gazzaniga over to Fabianski maybe this game week, or I might also include a -4 as part of that and do Ali and Rashford out for Salah and Dominic Calvert-Lewin, and that would probably be on the -4 with the goalkeeper move, but I might save that move for another game week maybe, because I'm not in a rush to bring in Salah, and I probably want Rashford for that Norwich game. I don't feel like I'm in a rush to take a hit or anything like that.
Yeah, well, I'm definitely taking a hit off my -12. I'm definitely going to be leaving it, hopefully. If there's an injury, I may have to move it, but hopefully there won't be one. And I'm going to be captaining Vardy. I've got the vice on De Bruyne, just because, I mean, Aston Villa, hopefully, maybe will elicit some returns for him. But he's in the deep-lying role at the moment. It wasn't deep-lying role in the last game, so maybe I'll move the vice to Salah or something against Spurs. But it's captain Vardy for me. And as I mentioned at the top, My team is now mostly ghost. I've got Fabianski in goal, a back three of TAA, Soyuncu and Lindstrom. Mane and Salah complete the Liverpool triple up. De Bruyne and Traore complete the midfield. And up front, I've got Vardy, Rashford and Mopay. Mopay is owned by 2.2%. Decent numbers, decent fixtures coming. So I thought I'd just stick him in and hope for the best, really. But I think that and the bench of Rico, Kelly and Dendonka will probably see me right, really, all the way until kind of game week 24, 25. So if I don't look at FPL, really, I should be fairly well set, and who knows, probably will do better through not managing my team than actually managing it. Maybe it will be all hell under management, but yeah, that's kind of how I'm set up, how I'll be. Let's see if Vardy actually plays this time. Cool, so that's your lot. Just say we are Who Got This List. You can find us on Twitter at WGTA_FPL, Nick at WGTA_Nick, and Stag at FPL Stag. Listen and subscribe across the podding spectrum.
Yep, and our league code is EIKX03 if you want to join the league. And there's a theme to every week. Last week it was you two.
Yep, Stag and Nick will be back in a couple of weeks after the next game week. I will be back in game week 28-ish to talk doubles with Ben Crellin. Enjoy the time away, enjoy the time with these two. Meantime, hope to assist you, and I'll speak to you very, very soon. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Where am I moving with this conversation? I'll just segue.
Mark Noble.
Mark Noble, yeah.
Top scorer in 2020.
There you go. Much less sort of bittery-like. Sports Social Podcast Network.